purchased a bit of relatively new public works white paper, and will be led this morning by DDG Mandisa Patiela Lindy. I think everyone knows her. And she's also accompanied by Mr. Spreadbury Andre Lehring. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Madam. We are in your able land. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member. Maybe just a few words before I get into the presentation, but the public works functional area, if you look at our constitution, it's not complex, but it's a big, it's a shared space, so to speak. And the decision to review the white paper was motivated by a number of issues that I'm going to take the committee through. And key, amongst others, the whole notion of the concurrent being a concurrent function. But also public works being the custodian of immovable assets of the state. But also acknowledging that not only public works as the custodian, there are other departments with the same delegated authority from the Republic. But public works also has an act, which is the government-wide immovable asset management act, and the need to enforce the implementation of that act within the principles of cooperative governance and within our intergovernmental relations system also necessitated that we pay attention to these issues in the development of the new white paper. I'm going to go through quickly, Chair, with the background. Public Works, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, has two white papers. One is the 1999 construction white paper, and the other one is the 1997 white paper, which is quite a generic one. And we have quoted extensively in the presentation. The presentation could have been long if we had taken into consideration also issues related to legal opinions that we have gotten over the years regarding the function of public works, but we decided to confine ourselves to the white paper.
You don't read off the screen.
Why don't you read from the thing? I'll do the best.
Print out this.
I'll do the best.
You're supposed to read in this text, but you need to change from optometry.
I'm just concerned that your site disappeared as soon as Honorable Adams walked in. And from what I remember, you went for operation to strengthen his site. Just during tea break, you give you advice.
thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. We're just sharing with you that public works has two white papers, the 1997 one, which is generic and covers what the core business of public works is about, and also the 1999 white paper, which focuses on the construction industry. in 1997, when the white paper was submitted to cabinet, other than leadership of the minister of the department, it was to ensure that public works as a function of public works department, but also public works as a function that deliver and impact greatly on issues related to job creation in South Africa, using its own imagination and innovation to ensure that we do respond to economic, to the social and economic objectives of the country, and ensure that every South African does participate within the sphere of influencing the public works function. At the time, Chair, we were supposed to make sure that when we implement our national public works program and the community-based public works program, we are basically ensuring that we will make an impact at dealing with the issues of poverty, and also ensuring that we do not ignore the rural areas. At the time, I was not working for public works, but if you read the white paper in its entirety, you will see that most of the things that are mentioned in this white paper are currently, they still need to be attended to currently. We were tasked to establish a durable strategy that not only sets out the department's key programs, but also make sure that we deliver on those socio-economic objectives and ensure that there is expanded investment in public works and dynamic changes in public works approach. You would recall that the EPWP followed that national public works program that was implemented and has a lot of best practice to learn from the public works program that preceded the EPWP. Public works programs, we had to ensure that we implement public works programs and ensure that when we deliver infrastructure, we deliver infrastructure that can create jobs in our community. We were tasked to ensure that the proper property investment and property and facilities management, and that the issue of project management receives a key, or is seen as a key priority. You would recall, Chair and Honourable Members, that Public Works has workshops in all its regional offices. We are at a point now, if I may slot that in, of revitalizing those workshops. But Public Works was driven mainly because most of the work that Public Works did in the past was delivered by Public Works with internal capacity. Introducing the project management approach, it was also to professionalize the delivery of social services, but not necessarily to downplay the importance of those workshops. I do know that currently the workshops, while we are resuscitating them, but most of them were closed, but we are at a point now whereby we're building relationships with, we have built rather, a relationship with the Department of Higher Education through its TVET program. I'm raising these issues, aligning them to each point so that we can have a broader sense of why we thought that, why there's a need for a new public works white paper. The country has evolved, and in this evolution, we have had an establishment of new departments. And those new departments, some of them, you find that pieces of public works function may lie in rural development, vice versa, and in other departments. GIAMA, the government-wide immovable asset management act. While we had this act, we were trying to give effect to our custodial role, and we to ensure that we are able to provide a uniform removable asset management framework to promote accountability and transparency within government, and to ensure effective removable asset management within government, ensure coordination of the use of removable assets with the service delivery objectives of national or provincial departments, and optimize the cost of service delivery by ensuring accountability for capital and recurrent works, the acquisition, reuse and disposal of removable assets, maintenance of existing immovable assets and protecting the environment and cultural and historical heritage, and improve the health and safety in the working environment. If you read the 1997 white paper, there's quite a lot of information around issues of health and safety, but also about the maintenance and of the state portfolio, and also facilities management with regards to how we manage the state portfolio. Now, because GIAMA is an act, we are then tasked to GIAMA to make sure that we come out with best practice guides for the management of immovable assets and minimum standards to facilitate benchmarking, condition assessment, and performance measurement of immovable assets. I just want to stress that when you read GIAMA as an act, it may be important that you read it in conjunction with the 1997 white paper, because it was our attempt to give effect also to that policy statement by coming up with an act. I will share with you some of the issues that are constraining when it comes to the implementation of GIAMA itself, which, as I said earlier, made us to reconsider and say, let's have a policy paper first that will give effect to a public works act. The department's 1999 white paper. The construction industry is a dynamic industry in South Africa and has driven the economy of this country. So it made sense for public works to actually have a white paper that would focus what the role of public works in the construction industry, but also to reflect government's vision for an enabling strategy aimed at enhanced delivery, greater stability, improved industry performance, value for money, and growth of the emerging sector in the construction industry. If you read the white paper, you would then have to reflect on the issues of collusion that have taken place, but also you'd appreciate there was a lot of thinking that went into the drafting of that white paper. The issues of value for money were raised to ensure that the industry is diverse, is transformed, but also it minimizes issues related to to negative performance of the sector. The 1999 white paper also reflected government's commitment to the objectives of development, growth, and the democratization of our society, as well as the vision of a construction industry policy and strategies that promote stability, fosters economic growth and competitiveness, creates sustainable employment, and addresses historic imbalances as it generates new capacity for industry development. We want to reflect on the new white paper on the issues that are affecting the construction industry, because the CIDB, which I'll come to later on, was established actually. This white paper gave effect to what the CIDB was mandated to do. So it was established after this white paper was developed by Public Works. To emphasize that point, point number 8 says, the white paper recognized that there was no recognized national agency at the time capable of coordinating the development and implementation of measures to promote best practice in the construction sector. If you go through the white paper on construction, you will see what were the objectives of establishing the construction industry and development board. Secondly, measures to enforce compliance with minimum standards in the sector were inadequate at the time. The white paper therefore proposed that a CIDB be established to advise on policy and existing proposed legislation, implement programs to address the volatility of demand, improve the construction industry performance, develop the capacity of the emerging sector. This is a highly contested terrain that the new white paper will also pay particular attention to, especially because we have developed together with the CIDB, a host of regulations that were developed to ensure that there's change or there's transformation in the construction industry. While we acknowledge that it's a work in progress, and the development of the CICP Act was meant to support that process, we have also recognized certain challenges experienced in the construction industry, especially by emerging contractors. Promote a streamlined regulatory framework, enhance government capacity to manage delivery, and support and champion enabling environment programs. Furthermore, it was recognized that there was a need for a coordinated interaction of government, professional bodies, and the contracting sector to ensure the appropriate development of all built environment professionals, greater synergy in the training of such professionals to meet public sector objectives, industry needs, and the promotion of existing and new professions. Chair and honorable members, if I were to just build on A, when the collusion takes place, there is consensus in the country that one of the things that we did not pay attention to was the professionals, their role in the collusion. I've had meetings with also some professionals who complained bitterly about their marginalization and are worried about the sustainability of the built environment profession in their diversity. Now, especially the engineers. If you look at the CPE and you read the 1997 white paper and together with the 99 white paper where they mentioned built environment professionals, public works was established to ensure that we deliver on the built environment professionals through CPE. The question therefore is, as we reflect on writing a new white paper, where are we in terms of ensuring that there's enough throughput from our schools so that we have enough built environment professionals in the country, but also the CPE plays a leading role in the delivery of built environment professionals. And that regulation for that built environment professionals, for built environment professionals is in place. I'm saying this because one of the things that the Competition Commission has pronounced on is the whole notion of IDO, the identification of work. CBE made a submission to the Competition Commission to actually adjudicate on this matter because it's provided for in the CBE Act. As you all know that we are looking at reviewing that CPE Act together with the CIDB Act. But what is important, the Competition Commission refused to actually endorse the implementation of IDO. They gave reasons why they wrote like that. And those reasons, Chair and Honorable Members, can be shared with you probably in another session. But in a nutshell, the Competition Commission felt that maybe as public works, we need to reflect on the inclusion of this IDO in the CPE Act. Maybe at the time it was appropriate, but it needs to be revisited. So these are some of the issues that we'll be paying attention to in the new white paper. But more so, they said, IDO would actually be perceived as anti-competitive. But we also did desktop research to look at whether do we have parallel situations around the world? Is there an IDO that exists around the world in a manner in which South Africa wanted IDO to be implemented? And it was found that each country, the countries that we have looked into, each had its own regime. But what we were proposing through IDO was unparalleled. And that became the main issue why the Competition Commission rejected IDO. I'm raising this to emphasize that IDO is provided for in the CPE Act. So that's one of the issues that we are going to be looking at. Greater synergy in the training of such professionals to meet public sector objectives. The professional councils rely on fees and operating in the environment, and these are public sector organizations that the Minister of Public Works provides over. And therefore it's important that 23 years into this democracy, we reflect on how we've done things, where we are, and whether are there any challenges that we need to deal with in the white paper that will impact positively on the built environment profession. Slide number 9, Chair and Honourable Members. The white paper, therefore, alluded to, called for the establishment of the CPE to address the above issues. But also the 1991 white paper led to the establishment of the CIDP and the CPE. But also the CPE is just an act on its own, but there are six professionals, there are six acts governing the various professions, the architects, the engineers, the quantity surveyors, the project and construction, management professions, property valuers, and engineering, and landscape. Now, when you talk of reviewing the CPE Act, Honourable Members, you're speaking of looking into that Act and coming up or developing an institutional form that will respond to the needs of the Republic. The current challenges that we're facing is that most of these are built environment professions. You have heard this before through the presentations done by the CPE here. There's misalignment between the acts governing these professions and the CPE. As a result, some of these professions are having a difficulty to be actually, for lack of a better word, told by the CPE what to do. So the white paper, as we are writing a new white paper, there are some of the considerations that say, how does then, if we choose to have a CPE, how does then a new CPE or a new institutional form of a CPE will relate to the profession? What will work best for the country to make sure that we have one point of we have a focal point when we're dealing with the built environment and profession? Honourable Member, slide number 10, I'm just there, we're referring there to what's in our strategic plan so that as we are engaging in this project with your support, we can also refer to our alignment to the MTU, to the medium-term strategic framework. There we emphasize in the point that in reviewing and revising the current white paper, the department will inter alia explore strengthening the regulatory role of the department in the above sectors, which are construction and property, while ensuring that there is transformation that will obviously pave the way for the Public Works Act. Now, in the Minister's 5-year policy statement shared with the committee and with Parliament, the Minister emphasized that we have to embark on a thorough policy review and make sure that we have an act by the end of this administration to refresh and clarify our mandate to establish a platform for sustainable development. As I said earlier, Public Works as a department was differently constituted, and Public Works has evolved. You find that in rural development, there are things that we have to do with rural development, and there are also certain things that we have to do with the other departments, but mainly a rural development. But you may find that the issues of land, for example, we can't pronounce on that finally without rural development. The issues of expropriation, I mean, the Minister of Public Works is the custodian of that bill, but you may find it's stated in the new bill that the Minister of Public Works should be consulting other ministers. So I'm just making an example about the interrelatedness of this department and the need to work together and ensure that there is an integrated approach that will accelerate service delivery. At the core of the of this policy review, the department therefore needs to review the white paper in order to assess progress and achievements, identify gaps and challenges encountered during implementation, and provide recommendations on addressing the same. Review the 1997-1999 policy objectives and assess their continued relevance in realizing government's national priorities, align the public works function with the NCP, develop policy objectives to address current developments in the local and global environment in which public works departments operate, determine how to better regulate and deepen transformation within the built environment profession. I just want to share with you, honorable members, an anecdote. We were in India in 2005, and we had made appointments to meet certain organizations. Guess what? We go and meet with this organization, I've forgotten its name, but they told us that they copied some information from Agrimo South Africa. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there and we're like, at that time I was still new. And I knew that most South Africans did not even know what Agrimo South Africa was supposed to do. Here we are in India, in the middle of Delhi, and we are told by our Indian counterparts that we have looked into one of your entities and we have liked what we see and we have copied that for our own training program. Now, the white paper has to be saying to the people of the Republic, these are the responsibilities in very clear terms of this department, and therefore we shall be able to do ADCCE going forward. G, determine how the construction and property industries can be better regulated to promote growth, transformation and competition. Determine the role of public works in ensuring that the construction and property industries are representative of the demographics of the country and are more inclusive of marginalized groups, women, youth and persons with disabilities. Determine how the departments can implement enterprise development initiatives to deepen transformation in the construction and property industry. Honorable members, you will agree with me about the structural impediments in our country that have blocked economic transformation. But as a department mandated to regulate the property and the construction industry, it is important that we pay attention to the imperatives of the white paper in terms of what is public works expected to do to deliver on that particular responsibility within the confines of its own mandate. Consider mechanisms to address conflict resolution in the construction industry. You will also remember, honorable members, we had to withdraw the prompt payment regulation. The prompt payment regulation, which we were trying to come up within it, or rather we had provided for conflict resolution within the prompt payment regulation. The reason why I'm raising this is the issue of conflict resolution in the industry is paramount and we are paying attention to it, but in the new white paper it will receive more attention to ensure that there are mechanisms to resolve conflicts. But I just want to emphasize that the prompt payment matter will be revisited as part of the review of the CIPD Act, but we will ensure that the current or the new Act will not impede the development of new regulations or the enhancement of new regulations to deliver on the issue of prompt payment. The issue of prompt payment has received cabinet attention for years now. It's not because there are no regulatory mechanisms in place to ensure that contractors are paid on time, but we thought that if we complement those initiatives with the prompt payment regulation, at least imagine contractors would be paid in time, as the regulation provided for penalties for public servants who may willingly or unwillingly delay a payment of contractors. Consider the ways to maximize the impact of public works programs to alleviate poverty and create sustainable employment, and clarify the national department's mandate and its oversight of the provincial departments of public works, given the concurrent nature of the public works function, as reflected in Schedule 4, Part A of the Constitution. I'm pausing here because we have legal opinions that we may probably want us to share with you one day, and it's very simple what has been stated. The The last one that we had in 2014 was by Advocate Kakas. We're looking into this whole issue of enforcing DIAMA, and we're toying with one issue that should we amend DIAMA to ensure it can be enforced better than it is now, or do we need a public works act that will ensure that the public works function is properly regulated or provided for at least within the confines of the Constitution. But the legal opinions that we have received point to one common factor. The Minister of Public Works does not have the power to preside over provincial public works. It's as simple as that. He can't call MECs to order, but he can, on a comradely basis, have conversations and use the regulations and standards of DIAMA to make sure that we meet our obligations of service delivery. In respect of the need to clarify the National Department's oversight of Provincial Department of Public Works, the following should be noted, honorable members. The Constitution does not assign public works functions to the national or provincial government. DIAMA assigns functional responsibility to public works in relation to its role as custodian of certain immovable assets within the national sphere of government, whilst the functional responsibility of the provinces is in relation to their role as custodian of immovable assets within the provincial sphere of government. In assigning public works functions, DIAMA does not expressly require the provincial executive as custodians of immovable assets that vest in provinces to account to the Minister of Public Works. For all the years that we've been coming to Parliament since 1994, there's been one common theme in Parliament in all the different portfolio committees of public works. What are you doing with local government? So when we come here, say, don't come here and tell a story. We want to know how are you linking with that municipality. As officials, we would humbly say it, but not loudly, that there are constitutional constraints in terms of the implementation from a legal perspective of some of these responses or this particular function of public works. DIAMA therefore provides the minister with limited means to ensure proper immovable asset management by the provinces. And DIAMA empowers the minister to issue standards to facilitate benchmarking, condition assessment and performance measurement of immovable assets. At best, honorable members, this entitles the minister to demand that provinces comply with such standards on a case-by-case basis. However, the issuing of standards would not oblige provinces to report on their progress or to provide the minister with information as and when required. DIAMA empowers the minister to implement government programs necessary to give effect to proper immovable asset management. It is arguable that it would be impossible for the minister to ideally implement any program without having provinces accounting to him. And DIAMA does not give the minister the power to either assess or investigate provinces' compliance with the Act, as does the National Education Policy Act. In this Kakane legal opinion, and even with the Professor Guto legal opinion, but more so the Kakane one, which is recent. We had looked into the Housing Act, we had looked into this Act, we had looked into the National Health Act, just to see how within the constitutional, the current constitutional imperative, these ministers are relating with the provinces. Such strategic and operational issues confronting service delivery within the public works functional area of concurrent legislative competence need to be addressed in the public works sphere. Where we are today, honorable members, because there's a lot that we can share with you in terms of why we are going for this new white paper. But let me now just switch on to the other issues and the entire process where we are. We have an ECCO white paper task team to oversee the white paper process. And this task team is chaired by the DG and includes heads of various branches in the department which are aligned there. And the ECCO task team has adopted a comprehensive framework to affirm the scope of the white paper, which captures some of the issues that I have raised, I'm raising here with you, and to define essential linkages to facilitate participation by all stakeholders. And the following thematic areas have been identified as fundamental to the white paper process. One, construction design and project management. The department continues to face challenges and constraints in the management of construction projects. And the white paper process will critically review the entire value chain, encompassing the disciplines of architecture, engineering, quantity surveying, and construction project management, program management of public sector, social infrastructure, immovable asset management, encompassing investment management, property management, and facilities management. And we pay attention to models where the department will focus primarily on the setting of standards, best practice guidelines, and monitoring and evaluation, while devolving more responsibilities in the execution of certain projects to selected departments. Public employment and skills development program to alleviate poverty through labor-intensive construction and property management projects, as well as community services. You know, honorable members, throughout the experience of implementing the EPWP, we picked up, our colleagues in the EPWP branch picked up that most of our engineers are not trained on labor-intensive programs. We had to zoom in on this as a department, because unless you want to make the EPWP to be an 11-hour consideration, it must be integrated as part of the value chain of planning. But if you have engineers who are not trained on labor intensity, then it becomes a problem for our engineers when they are on site to be able to enforce the pillars of labor intensive methodology. Another thematic area is the construction and property sector regulatory environment and constitutional law. Constitutional law, therefore, is mentioned there to deal with the issues of the concurrent air function and intergovernmental relations. Throughout 2016, regional offices were engaged, public works regional offices, through roadshows to refill the participation in the white paper process and to get comments on the achievements, challenges, and continued relevance of the key interventions identified in both white papers. An intergovernmental white paper task team has also been established, consisting of representatives of branches of DPW and the PMTE, public entities reporting to the department, provincial departments of public works, and selected national custodian or user departments. And the responsibilities of the IGR custom are outlined below to facilitate engagement with the respective branches, public entities, and departments, coordinate input from the respective branches, public entities, and departments on all aspects in the review of the existing white paper and the drafting of the new white paper, scrutinize and comment on research documents and draft of the new white paper throughout the review process. The department's legislative program is progressing according to plan, and research emanating from the following legislative projects will feed into the white paper. As alluded to before, honorable members, the Act, the review of the CIDP Act, is primarily to address governance challenges, the slow pace of transformation in the industry and the built environment profession, legislative compliance in the area of competition law, and the review of the development of the new CPE Act and the CIP law is premised on the need to achieve an appropriate balance between the independent interests of the self-governing authorities for the built environment professions, accountability to the public served by these professions, and accountability to government for the performance of statutory functions. The last slide, honorable members, talks to the process of the white paper. Gazette, draft public work paper for public comment by quarter four 2017-18, submit public work white paper to cabinet for approval quarter two 2018-19 fiscal year. Gazette, draft public work bill for public comment quarter four 2018-2019, submit the public work bill to parliament 2019-2020. As honorable members would know, when you're dealing with legislation, you have to move cautiously around the issues of consultation. And we normally dedicate a lot of time for that, so that by the time the bills have come in their draft to Parliament, at least we have satisfied ourselves that we have done to our level best, at least the consultation process, taking into consideration the CS process, which has replaced RIA, the Regulatory Impact Assessment. So we have to make sure that we also comply with that socio-economic impact assessment process that has been introduced by the President since, I think, August 1st last year, if not earlier. On that note, honorable chair and members, so this is a synopsis of what we will be going through when we deliver the white paper. Thank you.
Madam, thank you very much for the overview that covers quite a number of aspects that also took us via India and back to South Africa. There you have it, members, comments, questions.
Maybe, Chair, if I could also just flag some issues. First of all, to thank the DDG, I think, for a very useful input and helpful input. I actually took the trouble to reread, because I hadn't read it properly, the 1997 white paper and the 1999 white paper. And I think if colleagues in the committee are inclined, it's quite short, I think it's about 35 pages, the 1997 white paper. Quite interesting to read it now, because it's quite insightful, quite visionary, but also early days. So the very first point that the minister in his foreword makes, I think I'm not sure it's quoted in the presentation we've got today. Basically, it's the first time in many years that there is a single minister, it's now Minister Jeff Fadere, who becomes the Minister of Public Works after 1994. There's a single minister for public works. And the point he makes in his foreword to the white paper is that for many years, public works departments have been, all departments have been a Cinderella department. Without it, you know, with the minister, it's got a number of other portfolios and so forth. And therefore, a whole identity crisis really happens. You know, what is the Department of Public Works? And I think that as has been usefully outlined by the DDG, essentially what the white paper says is there are three, possibly four key functions. The one that identified very strongly, and which we've been grappling with this committee, with the property management trading entity and so on, because that's finally been launched in the time of this administration and this portfolio committee, it's the critical property management function. So the white paper of 1997 identifies this, you know, government buildings, to put it crudely, and the effective management of this massive portfolio, it has that insight, which then very quickly led to Cabinet saying there needs to be some kind of property management trading entity, but which for all kinds of complicated reasons never happened until this portfolio committee and this administration. So that's the first insight. The second major thing that he talks about a lot is a public works program and community work programs, as it refers to them directly. So in the early days, and it's basically is looking at what eventually becomes EDWP in 2004 as based in the infrastructure sector. It doesn't take into account other sectors that have now grown. But the job of public works in regulating and interfacing with the construction sector in particular, we need to, and it's the point that the DDG made, we need to push for labor intensity. We're sitting with a massive unemployment crisis back then, even in 1997. And the way in which we're doing construction is not labor intensive, it's as if we're living in first world. So we've got to push in that direction. And I think, as the DDG said, we've not succeeded in significantly addressing the labor intensity aspect of things. But nonetheless, what it does do is it locates the Department of Public Works centrally within public employment programs, and there's been a subsequent history to them. Then there's the regulatory function of the built environment profession, and the struggle for the development, transformation, and so on of them. And then there's the issue of projects and project management and so forth, okay, which is touched lightly on. So if colleagues are trying to read, it would be interesting. I want to just flag four or five what I think are complicated political issues that you and we will have to grapple with as we approach the white paper process, but not just the white paper process, because obviously the first thing is this critical task identified back then, still identified, of the department having this critical regulatory role in terms of the built environment profession and the construction sector. Okay. And in 2000, obviously as a result of identifying that out of the 99, there was this barrage of legislation, the six professional councils, the CIDB Act, the CDE Act, and so on. Now, I think we've been reporting to you that we've encountered many problems from our perspective, with particularly the CDE, but also the CIDB, which we think is more than personality. That we spend more time firefighting in that space, the minister does, than actually driving regulatory transformation and interaction with professions. So, yeah. And what is interesting about the 1997 program, and the Act, and the white paper, and also the 99 white paper, and the Act, and that's completely reflected here, is we've tended to default, understandably, into the narrow issue of critical issue of demographic transformation of the sector, okay. But we've always, in theory, on paper, and that we've probably not done well at all, but always on paper, we've always talked about other critical issues as well, labor intensity being one of them, occupational health and safety, training, a whole range of other issues. So the regulatory issue is not just about broad-based black economic empowerment, for instance, which is absolutely critical. Affirmative action is absolutely critical. We've tended to focus, okay. So, first big political conundrum is are the institutions that we've got as a result of the 2000 attack, basically, are they appropriate? Are they doing the job? What are the lessons we can learn? And how do we get the balance right between the state, with its critical public interest role, and the professionals who have, you know, I mean, a minister or deputy minister typically is not an architect or an engineer or a quantity surveyor and so forth, but has a public, as a committee, you have a public interest priority. How do we connect that with the professional experience and knowledge that is in the profession? This is always a tricky area. Because the danger, if you leave it all to professionals, is that they then act like guilds, and the committee, certainly in the time that I've been with this committee, we've often raised that issue. Engineering Council, you're not creating space for young black graduates and so on to come through effectively and so on. On the one hand, but so you've got to respect the professionalism, but at the same time, you've got to make sure that the public interest is represented. And how do we embed that in legislation? And so on. That's tricky and complicated, and have we got it right with the existing Act? And we suspect we haven't, which is why we're reviewing. The next one, which the DDG has spoken a lot about is the concurrent issue.
Okay.
Now, when we began to talk as this administration and with our minister about reviewing this and having a white paper, one of the frustrations was precisely what the DDG has signaled. There's a GIAMA, for instance, Government Removable Assets Management Act, and the Minister of Public Works is the custodian of it, but he can't enforce it. He can set standards and so can enforce it. We can enforce it in our state, our national state. But the Constitution very clearly recognizes public works, whatever that might mean, as a concurrent, doesn't say what public works means, but as a concurrent function. Now, do we beat our heads and try and find some imaginative way in and around the Constitution? Or, and this is what I'm tending to say with DDG, but for further discussion with our partners in the Portfolio Committee and ourselves, or do we say, are we even managing to enforce effectively the GIAMA in our national state? We're sitting with this massive portfolio, 112 billion we now know. The biggest property portfolio that is in our space. How are we doing with the GIAMA in that space and so on? So, but again, it's for a different group. Okay, so I'm just flagging that as an issue. The numbers of other things, I mean, what isn't flagged in the presentation is IDT. Okay. Because when we talk about project management and so on, we need to connect. The white paper can't be ignorant of the fact that there's an IDT. And how do we want to use the IDT? And what would be the responsibility of public works in that space? Okay. When we're saying that we're resuscitating the workshops, but for what? I think we need to be much clearer about it. What the function of our workshops are, because I support the notion of, you know, is it like little tools and things like that, or is it really just to manage the prestige portfolio better than we're managing it? But also maybe to train and to produce an incoming stream of artisans, you know, artisan trades and so on. Okay. Then there's the process. There are lots of other political things. And what we're saying here is basically we're looking at the CIDB Act, we're looking at the CDE Act, we're possibly looking at the other subordinates, the other acts of the six professional councils related to the CDE, and it sounds like we're going to do that first as we move towards a public works thing, and we'll do that first before we've got a white paper. And so I think the question you need to ask us and we need to ask ourselves is maybe we do these things concurrently and make sure that the people that are dealing with the CIDB Act amendments are not working in the silo while we're really working on a white paper process and so on. Okay. Then I think up front we need to say that that in the presentation, I think it's just like the penultimate page, before we say thank you very much for the end of the presentation, not that last slide. Basically, the timelines indicate that we hope to submit the public works bill to Parliament in 2019-2020. Now, the implication of that is it's not going to be this portfolio committee that we're submitting it to. Although our ambition was to do that. Now, that I think may be realistic, because you're right to say that we mustn't rush and then just mess up and then end up in constitutional courts and so on. But I think that, certainly I speak from my experience, and I would suspect many members in the portfolio committee would agree, and I've also been in portfolio committees in the past myself, that it takes a long time to find your feet. And to be on top of things. And therefore, I think that it would be very nice if we can realistically fast forward a little bit so that in terms of our planned timeline. And maybe we shouldn't trying to turn a white paper into a white paper which would precede an act into a voluminous 500-page document. I mean, what partly inspired me was that the 1997 one is about 56 pages or something, or 40 pages or something like that. And that's an executive summary, and then, you know, so it's quite brief and sharp and has played a very critical role, I think, we should acknowledge. So maybe in our own heads, and sitting in my own head, I've been sort of seeing this as a monumental task and so on. And I think it would be pity to lose, you know, the critical but collegial relationship that we've built up with this portfolio committee. I hope I'm right in saying that. I mean, we had a good but quite lengthy experience with the appropriation bill as this committee. So can we try to just revisit the timeline, bearing in mind that there are a number of political issues. And so it means, and even if we, but the time is tight, I realize this. So even if we complete a white paper process and give strong guidance into a new administration and the new system, you know, at least that would be an accomplishment. What we mustn't do is fail to produce a strong, effective and clear white paper. Hopefully we can also manage the legislation, but maybe that is complicated, because legislative drafting is complicated. But just so I didn't want to be non-transparent. I wanted to draw the attention of the committee and myself to the fact that the implications of saying public works bill to Parliament in 2019-20 doesn't mean this portfolio. Sorry, that was a bit long, but inspired by what I thought was a very helpful input by the TDG.
Thank you very much, Honourable President. Thank you very much, Chair, and once more. I think this is the last day to pass the compliments of the new year. Mm. Tomorrow will be in full swing in 27 days. I want to start off by expressing myself in favor of the sentiment expressed by Deputy Minister that we should try our utmost best to try and finalize this bill during our term. Because when a new committee, comes into play in after the elections of 2019, there could very well be a number of other issues that they raise and the process is delayed further. I think South Africa has entered a phase where the issue of transformation is very, very central in just about every aspect in every portfolio. And I wouldn't know what transformational drive, a government from 2019 would still be having. Just my couple of questions here, more for comment rather than direct answers, for discussion, let me put it that way. Starting off with page 7. How do you ensure that infrastructure development is evenly spread throughout the provinces in order to enhance balanced socio-economic development? Because maybe I will find that there are some provinces that are getting, call it the lion's share. Is it because they keep on coming up with their programs, asking for a high court, a building? I'm just using that as an example, I don't think about any particular province. The provinces that show a deeper and more serious demand for schools. I'm thinking about the mass schools in the Eastern Cape, not because I come from the high courts, for instance, we saw in Mpumalanga, as well as the one recently opened in Limpopo. What makes you to try to balance the spread of the budget? What enables you? What instrument? I'm asking this so that we can build it into the app. Number two, do you take into account in which construction is done when you are requested by a user department to build a school or something? What I mean by environment is you could build a school, only to find that it's actually surrounded by a river. And we've come across a number of cases where you would see on TV that children, you know, are swept away by rivers. What do you do about an enabling environment that surrounds, you know, your construction, so that development becomes, you know, integrated in the true sense of the word? Do you factor that at all into your policy? Another example here is talking about environment, difficult environment. I got a call from my colleague about 2 weeks back, who said that 2 cobra, a male and a female, were found around room B25 in Acacia Park. I'm in B21, that's quite close. And the other one actually slipped under a car, and it took 6 hours for people to extricate it from the car. They had to remove chairs and what have you. So the issue of environment becomes critical. Is that your concern, or is it somebody else's concern? We all know how dangerous cobras are. I'm not saying you must go into the business of killing snakes and all that.
It's illegal. It's illegal.
I've seen 3 on my property this morning because I'm surrounded by bushes. And when I invited the SPCA, they wanted to know what I was going to do. And I knew it was a tricky question. And I said, no, you take it away from my property. But my gardener, when he told me that he had seen one, I said, kill it, please. I don't want to say that.
we went report you.
I know there is a species, over 10 different species, that can be planted. Because I know that in the context of school buildings, there is a strong element of creating that kind of environment, you know. Do we then take into account, and do you want to legislate, you know, for that, or do you want to leave it? Third question. Are you going to be consulting with local government at all in the process? And I'm asking this because even on page 17, local government is not reflected where you've reflected the number of stakeholders that you intend consulting with. And I'm saying this, I'm asking this question because time and time again you find that local government, as much as they operate in a space of their own, they don't seem to take into cognizance a whole lot of national imperatives that enhance development. They look at issues from their own perspective. And also, secondary question to that, Department of Education, are you going to be in touch with them close enough to ensure, and this is critical, to ensure that there is synergy between proposed infrastructure development and curricula at school? You know, I pitied the Minister of Higher Education last year and the other year when he was battling with a question that should never have arisen. Fees must fall, give us free education. If you are not going to be employed within 12 months of leaving school, especially expensive tertiary education, there's no point in you going there at all. So the whole education system needs to be inextricably linked to our infrastructure development. This is the point I'm driving to here. That as you engage with them, because when we go out as a portfolio committee, we'll not necessarily be talking to government departments. I take it that's your job. We look at communities generally. Would you make sure that you engage with them and, you know, obviously you will always be having a budget for infrastructure development so that they have an understanding, you know, of the personnel requirements that the country is looking to need in the next 10, 15, 20 years, you know. Because if we miss this opportunity, that's why I started off by saying I support the notion that let's try our best to finalize this bill during, with the 5th Parliament. Because there are these notions we have got the privilege of being right at the beginning of the whole process. The new committee will not have that, that opportunity. So we need to build into this bill, the policy, then finally the bill, integrated development.
with special emphasis on education, giving direction to education. We should, at this stage, have an idea of the number of engineers that we will need in 10 years' time in the country, and not be surprised when so many retire. We should, you know, if we do our scientific research. Fourth question. A bill without penalties is like just a policy. I didn't see a clause referring, you know, indicating. Maybe I'm putting this question, I'm raising this issue very prematurely, but I would love for us to say, okay, we were reminded, you know, about the penalties. I'm saying this, Deputy Minister, considering what happened in 2010. I'll never forget the day when the minister said to me that, Sultana, the reason we don't have an appetite for pursuing those five companies that colluded in 2010 is because of the, you know, high legal costs. We can't be paying, you know, legal fees that's trying to pursue, you know, companies when we're not even sure. He said that these companies have got billions of rand, they have got access to the best legal minds, not only in the country, but even outside of the country. And so we need to have, you know, we know the weakness, you know, I think it's in the CIDB Act or something, you know, the weakness that is there. But if we were to have that in the principal act, you know, I think we would come out much, much stronger. So that if companies that do not reflect a transformational agenda in their employment, transformational agenda, which puts a lot of emphasis on use of locals, you know, instead of Chinese that we found in Northwest, as was reported over the weekend, you know, because that is still our space. Cement is our space as public works. Yeah, in a sense that finally building for buildings we need cement. So we I would want for us to stretch our wings as much as we can, acting of course within the ambit of the Constitution. Number five, pages 13 and 14. Oh, the last question, the previous question was on page 10. Pages 13 and 14. You didn't want to propose a constitutional amendment in order to assign more powers to the national minister. You reflected on the constraints of the minister in terms of what he can instruct, as it were, the provincial, you know, public works, what do they call themselves, roads and works and whatever. Have we reached perhaps a stage where we need to have a relook at the Constitution? Tell me why, Chair, I'm raising this issue. We have got these 3 years of government, and each sphere condensed that whereas we're on our own, we've got our own constitutional, you know, powers and space in which to deliver, you know, the services. You can't touch us. You can, but you must give us the budget. Constitution says you must give us the budget. But you don't come and think that you're going to tell us, you know, make a lot of noise when we don't properly account. We come across this in various departments. So it's almost like we have got a unitary state constitutionally, but practically we have got a federal state in South Africa. That is the reality that hit my mind here. We're not looking at it. In reality, we have got a federal state. If the national minister has got no powers, I'm saying this because I also know that somewhere in the Constitution there is a clause that says that where there is a conflict between the national and the provincial policy, it is the national policy that must say, you know, win the day, so to speak. But if somewhere in the Constitution, you know, the provincial counterparts, you know, cannot be touched by the national minister, then we effectively have got a federal state, even though in the Constitution we don't say so. And that's why, Honorable Deputy Minister, I'm asking whether we should, to circumvent this, be looking possibly at amending, you know, the Constitution. Again, the question of agency, you know, when looking at the matter, this term, you know, becomes relevant. Lastly, are we getting money, value for money, through these boards? We have got so many boards. These people, because they are specialists in their fields, liquor, corporate governance, this and that, their fees are quite huge. Now, if you were to take the fees that get paid to one board member per annum, you could actually create so much employment, you know, within our space, if we were to do without boards. I mean, why should a CEO report to a board and then that board comes to report? That's cumbersome. I would strongly suggest that we have a real look at whether we actually need these boards, because so many funny things which are not helpful to the broader developmental program of the country still happen, in spite of the fact that we've got boards. If anything, they get misused, you know, their influence is different. I'm not talking, you know, inter-party, I'm talking general. You know, general, you find some boards just not doing their function, and they get paid. These are professionals. Some people have got full-time jobs of being in, serving in something like 5 boards, and they know that every month I'm going to attend so many boards. What value are we getting out of that? Instead of creating jobs where they are most needed. These are people who are able to start their own companies, run their own businesses, but you've got someone who couldn't get to varsity, who really, really depends on government, that's us, to create employment and environment in which you can be employed. And we could slash. You know, if we were to take all the salaries of all the board members, you know, it's not salaries, what is it called, allowances, of all the board members, you might want to do this exercise, Honorable Minister. Say, we've got so many boards within, heading our entities, and the total amount of money that is paid to them. And you go back and you say, if we were to create employment for people who have got no skills, we would literally employ thousands of them. And that's where my heart and pain lie. And that's why I'm raising this issue. I thank you for the opportunity, sir.
On that note of heart and pain, thank you. Member Sierra.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me outright also say I do support the issue that it would be proper if we finalize this white paper before the end of our term. To me, it will be much better than if we leave it to someone else to come and finalize it. If it is possible, let's relook at it and see how we can squeeze it in. Somewhere when you were presenting, you talked about the workshops that have been closed and you want to revitalize them now. We just wanted to check why were they closed, and then how do you see us sustaining them after we shall have opened them. The other issue is about the EPWP. You mentioned that most of our engineers, contractors, they are not trained as far as EPWP is concerned. We used to have it in the past, the training, this type of training of EPWP, so that those contractors are able to implement it. But somehow it also stopped. How can we resuscitate it? Because it was really a good one. It assisted a lot.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mimate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just concerned also to compliment the department of this new white paper. I felt that is very tough for you to complete it, but it's one of your biggest, because we don't know what will happen in 2019. I've noticed my question is that I've noticed that the your department with this yam, it has a problem, especially when it comes to immovable assets. I don't think department knows all, because there's a lot of immovable assets that are in ACAD. They don't know all of them. So when you say the purpose of GIAMA is providing for making immovable asset management framework and to promote accountability and transparency within the government, it's not possible. Because you guys have still got a long way to go. The second one is the issue of your professional state the system. The 99 white paper also recognized that there was a need to a coordinated interaction of government professional bodies and the contracting sector to ensure that they provide development to the environment professionals. I think in South Africa we have a lot of professionals who are marginalized. And you mentioned that the CDE, they are the ones who are in charge of that. But really, there's a lot of engineers. This lack of skills is not true at all, because we meet with those people and we talk to them and they wanted to find out. We don't want the panel to come to the country, but how to be recruited. And the last one is a proven international power. I think as a department, we just have to come with the, I don't know, this is close or whatever, to make sure that the power and functional for provincial and the national should just be maybe well concurrent, knowing exactly if the house is really in Popo and another one is in KwaZulu-Natal, and let them be same loss. I think that would be okay to enforcing YAMA and public respect. Thank you.
Honorable Member, thank you. Honorable Evans.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I was late because I had to do some other things in another committee. Chairperson, this concurrent function is in our constitution. But according to section 4, there are a number of functions attributed. For example, tourism, basic education. How does that department overcome this function of concurrency? There should be a uniform approach so that this concurrency doesn't hamper the work of the national departments. And it looks as if that has to change. But saying that, Jefferson, what is the role of the MINEX? isn't there an ample platform at MINMEX to overcome this function of concurrency? I understand the frustrations. I do understand it. Then, Chairperson, the branch policy, research and regulation, I assume it's that branch that went on the roadshows, the regional roadshows. Who performed the regional roadshows, as you said it on page 17? Now that branch, is it ample capacitated with regards to human resources and capacity? Because that is a branch, in my view, Chairperson, that must drive this the writing of this white paper. And you know, Chairperson, in the turnaround strategy, it was said that by 2019, this white paper will be there. And I got the impression this morning, after coming late, that it might go beyond 2019. Now, where did the lapse in time go? Didn't we stuck to our program of action? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Adams. I think this is an appropriate time to take a rejoinder from the department.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to the colleagues for raising a number of issues. Let me begin with the more general ones, which were raised in particular by Honourable Sultani, but also obviously by other colleagues. And of course, they're all good and important questions that have been raised. The first question, he said, I think you said you had 5 questions, but it sounded to me like it was 25, and I've got 20 responses. So, on the first issue is how do we ensure as a country, not just as the Department of Public Works, that infrastructure is evenly spread nationally, but also strategically spread and integrated? And obviously we are a player as the Department of Public Works in that space, but Transnet, Eskom, private sector, SANRAL, not to mention provinces and municipalities, all players in that space. And that was the reason why in the previous administration, finally, in about 2011-12, there was an Infrastructure Act, which also then established the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. And the minister and I, in different capacities, are both active representing DPW within that broader coordinating function, which works, by the way, with which also brings into its deanery sessions all of the premiers, including, say, from the Western Cape, and some of the metro players as well, into that space, recognizing the important role that they play. So, and that's why we've got what we're called these SIPs, the Strategic Integrated Projects, because the lesson we learned from, apart from collusion in 2010, the lesson we learned was that the state had the capacity to, under very tight deadlines, drive massive, sometimes white elephant, but massive infrastructure programs, okay, and to guide them. Now, why can't we do that year in and year out? Why do we just do it for Seth Blatter? And so, you know, and of course what happened with 2010 was that there was this huge surge of building, and then the pipeline just collapsed and jobs were lost and things like that. So we said, how do we develop a pipeline? So the other question you asked me, how do we sustain a pipeline, which is one of the ambitions of construction? Can't do it narrowly as public works, but we're a player in that space, and we need to be coordinated, and government, of course, has a tendency to operate in silos and so on. So don't worry about concurrence, but even at a national level, the challenges of getting coordinated action is important. Sorry, it's a long-winded answer, but the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission is an attempt to get much better strategic coordination, better regional spread. So the SIPs, as they're called, there are 18 of them, and they include Southern Africa, but the other 17 of them seek to at least have a presence in every province, but connect one thing to another thing, the school bill to the broadband rollout and things like that. So we're making the connections. Okay. In terms of the more down to the level of COBRAs, I'm sorry, we can't say that's public work. to protect the natural life, to respect snakes, but obviously to be cautious around them. But the more specific point you're asking is like location of schools and things like that. Well, that's where. That's obviously the big discussion, and there will be an input into this committee, I think as a result of Honourable Fatani in particular asking for precinct development, not just in Tshwane, but in rural towns. So that's one place in which we're trying to get a rational approach to how and where we build things. Now, we have to do that working very closely with a range of partners, but particularly with municipalities, and particularly with their IDPs. And we know that there's a big challenge with IDPs. They're often cut and paste jobs by consultants who don't understand that there are rivers surrounding a school, or that there's snakes in the bush and so on. So, but again, we can't solve it, but it's about improving the capacity of municipalities to develop sustainable and intelligent integrated development plans, and for national role players and provincial role players to not ride roughshod over that, but maybe to say, look, are you, you know, to engage with their IDPs, not just to be mechanically implemented, and say, are you, do you realize there are rivers where you want to put the school and so on. You said, do we work closely with the Department of Basic Education, I think you meant, but also higher education, and yes, we do. But the infrastructure budgets for those sectors, they rest with them, not with us. They have the budget, and they're often suspicious, and sometimes for good reason, that we're not up to the task and so on. But we've been active in the SED school process, and IDT in particular has been active in it in recent cases.
Can I just clarify that?
The emphasis, with due respect to CM, is on the development of professionals that will drive infrastructure development. That's why I use the terms, this would influence, help to influence the curricula and the syllabus. It's not so much on the infrastructure development. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that clarification. And those are exactly the discussions that we have with them, but with also the professional councils that we're talking about.
Okay.
So the engineering council, EXA, for instance, they have got a projection around how, you know, given a particular infrastructure pipeline, what are the engineering requirements, different kinds of engineers, etc. So we do try to do that. The 2010, okay, and the collusion issue, I think maybe the minister was a bit misunderstood. I hope and I believe that in SONA there will be further announcements basically as to what has happened. But the direction, mainly through the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission that was adopted, was there's been massive collusion. The Competition Commission, Tribunal, all of that have upheld these findings, and quite significant fines have been paid by five or six of the major construction companies, okay, quite significant fines. As the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, we said the fines are not good enough. There must now be reparation measures as well, so that they don't. So the fines weren't a cap on the wrist. I mean, they were quite significant, but at the same time, you know, we still need to drive a transformation into the process. Now, a number of entities or metros were at the same time contemplating taking up civil action. Okay. So SANRAL, for instance, around the GTIP, the highway development in Gauteng, the city of Cape Town around the stadium, the stadium here, some of the other cities as well, also affected by state collusion around the stadium. So as the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, we engaged with them, and we pointed out several things. And this is where I think the Minister was misunderstood. The first thing we said is that civil action can take a long time. Collusion is one thing, and it's proven. Proving that there was actual loss, financial loss, is another, because what the companies are arguing is that we colluded, but because the time scale, we couldn't all bid for all of the same projects, so we pretended to bid for somebody. In fact, we nodded and winked in one direction and some. So they divided it up, but they spoiled amongst themselves. But they said that their argument is that it had a no substantial impact in terms of actual charges. I don't believe that, but that's their argument. And to prove it is very complicated, and obviously, as the minister correctly said, they've tied up a lot of the lawyers that would be up to argue with the court. The second thing we pointed out to the city of Cape Town and so on is, if there's an award, a civil award that's made to you, that there's a finding by the court that, you know, you lost 200 million or something like that, which is distinctly possible, it wouldn't go into the accounts of the city of Cape Town or Sandwell. It would go to the national revenue account. So think about that as well. So you'll be spending ratepayers' money here in the city of Cape Town in order to fight around the thing. But the ratepayers of Cape Town are not going to see justice might be done, but it won't come into the thing. So we said, let's have a different approach, which was led then by the PICC, basically, and our minister was involved in the process, which said to the you guys also don't want to face offending companies, don't want to face prolonged legal process and hassles and so on, and also they need to be in the good books of government because we're a principal client. So we've pursued a major reparations thing, and they've signed off on it. So significant amount of money, a trust fund, training, and so on, and the details will be announced. But it amounts to billions over things. And we think that's a much better approach. So I just wanted to say that nothing to do with white papers, but and hopefully the SONA address will give, or the post-SONA address, there will be further explanation. But just so that it's not like we're running away from a responsibility and so on. Very quickly on that, because I agree with the value for boards. I think we need to look at that. I mean, I think in big entities that borrow on money markets and things like Transnet, Eskom, SAA, for better, that's the word, have to have boards, okay? SABC, possibly, it would have to have a board as well. But a regulatory entity, I'm not persuaded about that, and that's one of the things we need to look at when we look at the CIDB and CBE Act and so forth. Yes, we can look at changing the constitution or amending the constitution, but I think that let's not. You see, yes, there are strong features of federalism, and the federalism is not just because other political parties might control the Western Cape. Some of the strongest federalism is now built into the operation of the national ruling party, okay, because institutions then have a dynamic and so forth. And so I think my view, but it's something we need to debate further, is that when it comes to the Guillaume, so let's explore how we can strengthen the capacity of the minister, but let's not try to await an amendment to the constitution. Fundamentally, an excellent constitution, whatever the frustrations that we might, you know, let's defend it and let's do a good job within the space that we've got. That's my intention. The other things which I'm sure that, and you're free to disagree with me as well, by the way, some of the things that I've said. Thanks for those broad, they were more broad questions, but they're relevant because as we approach a white paper, what is the space of public works within this broader space? So I think it's correct to answer those, ask those broader questions.
I just want to just raise another issue related to the issue of delivery of infrastructure. That in terms of our, also in addition to what the Deputy Minister said, the issue of that normally delays also and affects delivery, the issue of site clearance. We recognize that one of the issues we must pay attention to in the white paper is the town planning functioning within the department, but also making sure related to the throughput that we have enough town planners in the country as well that can serve the public service, because site clearing is a tricky issue, because you may find that the site is linked to a local municipality or is vested under a province. So it's a process to actually ensure that when you acquire the site, there won't be any legal challenges related to the vesting and matter. So we're looking at those professions as well. The town planning and two other professions that we know are not falling under the ambit of the CPE. So we also want to correct that, but also during the review of the development of the new act. On the issue of why workshops were closed, I can only assume that it was because of a change in the business model to emphasize project management. I wasn't working for public works. There could have been other reasons, but I think it was the business model, adopting a new business model, and to walk away from the Cinderella stereotype. But also, going forward, the Honourable Member said, what are we going to do going forward? We're lucky to still now, because we have these Tibet colleges, because we also, as a country, kind of scaled down on the development of activism. Now that that has taken, is being embraced by DHET with speed, we also have to respond and meet DHET halfway by making sure that our workshops can be able to absorb as many graduates from these Tibet colleges. So there's pressure, but also that must also receive good space in the white paper, that type of relationship with DHET and the Tibet colleges. And then the issue of engineers who are not trained in labor intensive methodology has received, but there was, I think the EPWP colleagues came up with, I don't know if you want to expand on that, yet, or with an interim measure, but it also goes back to their training, where they are trained. It's about influencing the curricula, the development of the curricula. On the issue of the Honourable Member of other departments not knowing their assets, actually, you should be fine in terms of the PMA if you don't know your assets, but also Guyana should kick in. One of the things that we have worked with Treasury very closely is the recognition of Guyana. Treasury should not be entertaining bids from government departments that have not also been scrutinized by public works. We should be working together to ensure the bids, the MTF bids, comply with Guyana, because it is in those bids where you must disclose your assets, because we are applying for a budget. And one of the responsibilities of any accounting officer is to ensure that they know where their assets are. But we're not saying that that will only be dealing with this matter. We also, we have recognized that in the implementation of Guyana, there's also lack of understanding of the Guyana principles with our clients as well. As I know that some departments, for example, would deploy junior officials to deal with public health, and then you are busy rambling this Guyana language, and you make sure that so we're paying attention to that particular relationship and make sure that our clients understand the imperatives and the requirements of Guyana, at least at national level. The whole notion of professionals who are marginalized and also and that there is no shortage, I guess that's debatable, because all of these are again influenced by the throughput. But I don't think we are using probably effectively the current numbers that we have. But for me, it's about how willing are they to work for the public service those. Because public works was a training ground, actually, for most of these engineers that are working in these companies. And those that they were even a few years ago left for the Middle East to respond to infrastructure delivery in the Middle East, they were trained by public works. And guess what? They came, some of them, as interns and learnerships in public works, finished their schooling as a doctor so-and-so, having arrived in public works young, but there was a value chain in place that was also sustained by the workshops, but also adequate capacity in government and the willingness to work for government. But one of the things that maybe must receive proper attention in the white paper is the relationship between talking about this throughput and the role of DPSA. Because the time is we need to make sure that our partners, like in DPSA, just like we are doing with Treasury, understand the dynamics behind the attraction of wanting to work for the public sector. Because we have been through this before. The Minister of Water Affairs, I read in the newspaper, think about being questioned that why is it going to Cuba, because the South African Institute of Civil Engineers was saying there are enough people in the country. But then if there are enough people in the country, we should be having them in abundance in public works. But we should be able to make it attractive for them to come and work in for government, just like they used to work for government and were trained by government as before. The on the issue of the concurrency function, we will deliberate on that a lot, honourable member. I don't remember now what was the focus of the question, but it has to be improved, because if it's not improved, then it works against what is delivered. If you read the policy framework that gave effect to Guyama, for example, there's a common thread running in those different policy statements before we drafted Guyama, and they all emphasize service delivery. We developed the act to ensure that we improve on service delivery. I thought the Deputy Minister was going to answer what is the role of members.
Oh yeah.
But the capacity of the research and policy branch, honourable member, is still wanting. We're waiting for the organogram to be concluded. For example, when we were doing the expropriation bill, we were so spread thin that I thought we were going to collapse. By the time we finished that process, I just wanted to go away and lock myself in some park. Because we had to be at times in two provinces within one day. But the organogram now has been completed in the department, and the attention has been focused on building the capacity of the branch. Because we need to anchor policy thinking and policy conceptualization and build the capacity, research capacity of our policy and research in government. So that we will always outsource certain things, but it must be to complement and also to get young people to understand what policy is about. When I tell my two daughters what I'm doing in policy, my 16-year-olds always say, "What is that? What do you do? I hear you, but I don't hear you." And then you have to explain that it is the anchor actually of everything that you have to do, because you have to follow due process in trying to simplify it to her. So I agree with you on her for now.
Function of MINMEC. I mean, MINMECs are statutory bodies, and obviously the minister meets with the MEC. Ours is slightly complicated in that many provincial MECs have joint functions. In fact, I think the majority of them do. And not just MEC for public works, but for roads, transport, and so on. It's a collaborative space. And I think the officials have been in this department longer than I've been deputy minister in this department. I think it's been functioning extremely well as a coordinating function. But at the end of the day, obviously where there are powers vested in different spheres of government, one can get collaboration, and we do. But one can't instruct an MEC to do certain things when it's not within the power. But it's functioning extremely well around the immovable asset register, for instance, process, and we've done well on that. So we have a very good sense of what we've. And not only do we know what our properties are, but we've been able to value them on the basis of fair value. But there are problems with in some other spaces, but not in our view in public works, not the standard works you might read in some new spaces. So we believe that we have a strong, and there was very good cooperation with the provinces, because there was a lot of discussion around trying to work out where a particular parcel, land parcel, should be vested with what properties and something. We look very intensely there. So in short, the MINMEC can't solve a constitutional problem, but it can act as a very constructive forum in which there's mutual sharing of information and persuasion and learning from each other, and indeed we do. So, I mean, often there are good examples that come from a province which we apply nationally, and conversely we like to think that some of the good things we do set an example for provinces to follow.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Members, further comment, questions? directions, going. Good folks, from the department, the officials, the minister, thanks for the briefing. And I'm sure that it gives an indication to members as to where we are in regard to the process, and we'll move forward together on this, where members can add further views. I'm sure they will do so as we progress and get further input as to where we are, where there are difficulties to navigate them together. Good folks, thank you very much.
Thank you.